There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba the Bloom, episode 58. Going to talk about some ground ball and fly ball gainers from last season to this season and see, does it matter? That's going to be the fun part about that one. Talk about some recent news and notes, as well as our weekly game and see who's taking care of business there. And before we get to all that, you can find myself on Twitter at BDentric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how we doing, my friend?
Yeah, we don't need to bury the lead. We know who's dominating. We know who's dominating and probably paying our round of golf in Arizona. There's some time, but you're doing
like
quite
4 months
for
to
yourself.
Go.
It's those five different daily podcasts and shows that you do that is the advantage over me here.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. See how this weekend goes, but we'll get to that soon enough. We'll get to some news and notes here to kick things off before we talk about a fun Bloom board that's a little different than the huge, and I think it'll be a fun kind of open our mind conversation, if that makes sense to anybody out there, when we get there to instead of just looking at numbers to actually does it matter type situation. But let's talk about a little bit of news and notes here. We'll start with the Tampa Bay Rays, as Tyler Glass now is expected to make his debut this season for the Tampa Bay Rays. I was actually surprised it was this soon. I was expecting it to be later, but he's starting on Saturday. He's looked really good in his last two rehab starts. And he's going to slot right into a rotation that could use a little depth at the moment, as McClanahan, Eflin, Josh Fleming, Taj Bradley, who's still there. But it looks like Glass now's time to shine. So how are you excited about this, maybe in a fantasy viewpoint?
I mean, I'm excited. I mean, he's on a per-inning basis. Glass now is freaking awesome. And so we want to see the best pitchers pitch and make them healthy. So from that aspect, it's good. Not really much like fantasy wise you can really do. I checked before the show. He's 100% rostered in 15 teamers, 12 teamers.
I checked when I was making my pitching pick. I'm all, just in case. Like maybe like just people drop case. Them everywhere. Who knows?
Even in main event 15 teamers, Glasnow 74%, I think, started. So I think that speaks to more of the pitching landscape than anything else. Because like Glasnow, you did mention the rehab assignment. He did look good. 20 Ks, 5 walks, 13 innings, 4 starts. But don't think he's reached like 70 pitches. So I think the kid gloves are going to be on for a little while. But, I mean, you start him in everywhere, especially starting next week. So it's funny that they had to we were talking about, I don't know, a couple weeks ago. I forget which board it was. I think it was our trifecta episode with Yanni Chirinos, who was just like so wildly lucky. He had like a 220 something ERA at the time. The Rays are smart. The Rays demoted Yanni Chirinos and his sub 250 ERA last week to make room for Glasnow. So smart team. Even though like there's not much depth there, man. There's not much depth. They need Glasnow.
They need him badly. Healthy. Need him badly with Rasmussen and Springs and all those guys pretty much Dunskied. They need him in a big way.
They had a rotation on the IL. I mean, Rasmussen, Springs, Shane Baz, and Glasnow, like that'll play.
Yeah, you had Ryan's Rays. It was pretty impressive. if we want to get like specific here, in his last rehab start, it was 6 innings, 2 hits, 1 run, 2 walks, 6 Ks. But like, as you mentioned, while I was looking it up, 67 total pitches. That was his highlight so far. So maybe 75 to 80, like you said, because it is the Rays. They will go kid gloves in a heartbeat. And I've mentioned it on other shows before. I get confused on which one it is anymore. But like, they've come out and said it. And usually McClanahan's the one exception to the rule. But it's pretty much they want to get you out of there between 80-ish to 85 pitches. That's like their formula in Tampa Bay. And you've seen it. And even the other night, McClanahan's last start, he went 7 innings, strong innings, 82 pitches. Like, most guys would have kept going after that. So they are definitely like cognizant of, we need these guys for the entire season. We're the best team in baseball. So if we can get 80 good pitches out of them, we have a good bullpen. We'll make it work. So like you said, Glasnow might be actually full go for Rays standards on Saturday, but not for our standards per se.
And speaking of McClanahan, holy hell, man. That's an L for me. That's an L for me.
You and me
both.
He has
been so good.
Yes, but okay, here's where I want to at least give us a little kudos to our like, he's been great. I'm not going to deny that. But let me pull up his page, because I was looking into him for a column recently. So 1.97 ERA. 197 ERA, 3.56 xFIP. So still very, very good. The thing that got me, 19.4% K to walk. So it's just about where we want it. The guy that was dominant last year was way, way higher than that. So he's still doing great. I'm not going to say he's not. He's been awesome. But like, the lack of Ks slash the still the walks situation makes me wonder if he's still got something going on. That's my only concern. I could be wrong. I'm trying to give myself a chance, like a reprieve.
You're stubborn tonight, man.
Yeah. So hey, this is what happens. Like,
no, it's true. It from your you do make a good point. He's been, I would say, very good from a skill standpoint. Whereas first half Shane McClanahan last year was like
ridiculous,
otherworldly.
So. And the other thing I would say, and we don't need to go on and on about him, because he's, like I said, very, very good. But what I wonder is, is it because the landscape is so bad right now? We're like, this is freaking amazing with Shane McClanahan. Right. Instead of like, oh, he's doing good, but like, how good type thing. So that's my only, I wanted to throw that out there just to say, don't beat yourself up. It is only May 25th on this one. All right. Los Angeles Dodgers. This is going to get real fun this weekend. Real fun. Because Gavin Stone will make his second start. And for those keeping track at home, Gavin Stone, you can make all the Stone jokes you want, and it's been rough for him. Like, we've seen the minor league numbers, the expectations were through the roof, came back up here for a second start. It was Atlanta. We kind of joked it was at Atlanta. He's got at Tampa Bay this weekend, but 4 innings, 5 more runs, only 1 strike. He's only got 1 strikeout in both starts, 5 walks this last time. It was not great, and I know, again, it was Atlanta, but still not great. You got Bobby Miller, who came out and – a lot of us, I know I have, I think you have, I don't want to speak for you, I've always thought Bobby Miller's the dude that won over Gavin Stone anyways. This is the guy. Well, he got his call finally because of all the injury situations in Los Angeles. He went 5 innings, 4 hits, 1 run, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts. That's kind of what we're looking for in this situation at Atlanta. The last thing I'll mention before I give you the floor here, Michael Grove is rehabbing, and he actually started the season in the rotation. So you'd think they'd be like, oh, let's get him back in the rotation situation. So all of this long-winded situation comments I'm making here, Ryan, you have Gavin Stone, who has to basically play for his job Sunday, it feels like. You have Bobby Miller, who will be a massive fab target Sunday. And then you still have Michael Grove coming behind. How do you see this playing out from a fantasy standpoint?
It is open auditions. Yes. Absolutely open auditions. But probably for like a temporary role, because – I mean, Julio Urias, it doesn't sound like this hamstring injury is that serious. So that spot's coming back up. Obviously, Kershaw, I believe his mom died, unfortunately. So that's obviously very temporary, even though he's not listed in the rotation right there. So it is open season for auditions. I mean, if you're telling me to like, if you're asking me to like rank these guys, I think it's Miller and then like a Grand Canyon size gap down to Stone and then Grove. Grove, like Michael Grove, has 45 innings of a 5.96 ERA in the majors between this season and last season, not missing bats, like walk rates semi-high. I don't really like the long-term outlook there. Gavin Stone is a stone's throw away from going back to the minors because, like, just hasn't been good. You mentioned the control. Like, yes, it's Atlanta, but, like, you walk five guys against anybody. I mean, that's five walks, and I don't know. So I think Miller's in the rotation. I mean, he looked fantastic against Atlanta. Didn't have like the whiffs and the CSW that you might want, but like it's Atlanta in his first start. Like that's I think it was on the road.
Yeah, well. It was in Atlanta. So, I'll take every bit of what he did. Every bit of what he did. And so, what we're kind of talking about here is one of these three guys will get the Dustin May role, which could last for the rest of the season potentially. So that's what you're garnering for. The second guy will get the Julio Urias role that'll last maybe another week or so. Because like you said, he's supposed to throw a bullpen session Friday or Saturday. If that goes well, he might not even need a rehab start. If not, he'll get like one rehab start. He literally could be back by like a week from today into next weekend, something like that. I think their target, I think they might be the team playing in New York first weekend in June against the Yankees. They're targeting having him back that weekend. So you get maybe one more Stone start, one Grove start, something like that. So you are literally out of these three, what we're talking, why I brought it up is this is the guy that's going to take Dustin May's spot. And I think it's Bobby Miller. I'm 100% with you on this. That's the guy I want. I just wanted to bring it up because people are going to be like, oh, Gavin Stone. Like, cause that was the name. That was like the first guy up, but don't forget Michael Grove. It's a interesting situation in LA. That's all I'm gonna say.
The Stone thing specifically is really interesting. Cause yes, he wasn't as high of a prospect as Miller. I know Fangraphs had Stone, I think, fifth or sixth in the organization, Miller second. I know HQ had Bobby Miller second. So, like, he wasn't to Bobby Miller's level, but like Gavin Stone this season, I got really excited over the spring training numbers and that sort of thing based on how he ended 2022. It's been pretty bad in AAA, even for Gavin Stone. So, like, I don't know. I think he's just trying to work through some things. One name that he can't seem to get healthy. He feels like he's been rehabbing forever and ever. But Ryan Pepio, I think if you're looking at like a deep, deep stash in the second half,
good call.
That's someone who is interesting to me, maybe even more so more than Gavin Stone.
I'd have him behind Miller. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I'm with you. That's a good
call. Can't seem to get healthy. I think he actually just had a setback. There's an oblique issue and it sounds like we're looking at all-star break, but I don't know. That's kind of a dark horse name. That
it's a good dark horse name though, because like some things we've talked about on recent shows is kind of like we say speculating, but it's one of those. Pepio was actually drafted in a lot of leagues, like if we're talking NFBC, so he's out there. Like if you're just paying close enough attention and you want to be like a week or two earlier than everybody, you could get him for a buck. And those are the kind of things that could be like tremendous when things go farther down the road. So that's a good point.
Yep.
Actually reading this one. Okay. Here's an update from May's a week ago, but Ryan Pepio was out since the end of spring training with an oblique injury on the 60 IL. He's supposed to start a rehab potentially soon, it says. So that is something. He's still feeling soreness as an oblique and is likely out until the All-Star break. Like you said. Okay. Yeah, there you go. There's your answer. Yeah.
So it'll be some time, but I don't know. Remember the name.
Yeah, that's a good call, though. Very good call. I just want to bring up a quick one here. Logan Webb was supposed to start on Thursday. Got to start pushed back to Saturday. He's been dealing with some lower back stiffness. Just going to say this was a thing that was a concern going into the week. So I know like even some smart players didn't even start him in NFBC this week. I wouldn't be shocked if they skipped this start, to be honest. Like they have no reason to push him right now. He's been their dude. Don't break him because it's somehow, some way the Giants are doing this to me again. They're being competitive right now and it's annoying me. They're being very competitive and they can't not be competitive if they don't have Logan Webb. So it's one of those, like if he's got a little back issue, just kind of power on to the next time.
So and you just hope it doesn't like, I don't know. Has he had this in the past? Cause I think of like CJ Cron example where like it happened last year. It happened this spring and then everyone got all worried and then he was fine. And then it came up again. Now CJ Cron's on the IL. I just worry about, and we don't know how serious it is, whatever, but this coming back down the road. God, I didn't even mean to say that one, but
proud of you. You've been on fire tonight, my friend. No, well done.
It's not good.
You and Brooksy, this is good stuff. Kyle Hendricks made his debut on Thursday. They pushed Jameson Taillon back a day, and Taillon could definitely use that because it's been a rocky road for him as well. But Kyle Hendricks, first start of the season, and it kind of went how most starts last season went for Kyle Hendricks. That's the best way I'm going to put it. The Mets got to him, is what I'll say as I pull up his game log. 4 1/3, 6 hits, 5 runs, 3 earned, 2 walks, 5 Ks. So any interest in Kyle Hendricks?
Awful generous of you to put Kyle Hendricks on the rundown.
I'm being sarcastic. Did I miss something?
No. It's just I don't think he's really fantasy relevant.
Oh, okay, like, good. I thought there was an inside joke. I'm like, what?
No. It was just, you know, talk about Kyle Hendricks. But yeah, no, I don't know. You need that like magic, that command, whatever Kyle, that mojo, whatever Kyle Hendricks had for those few years where he outpitched his peripherals for so long. I don't think that's coming back the way the ball is this year. Like, pitch to contact guys, it's just not for me. In like the 5 Ks that Hendricks had today, I wouldn't be surprised if that's his max for the season. So no, I'm not interested. Like, maybe as a streamer in a very good matchup, but that's about it. There's some even streamers, like, if you don't get strikeouts like that, there's just, it's almost like you'd rather have a middle reliever in and get more Ks and 2 or 3 innings of shutout ball. So
100%. Another note that you added to the line, which is a good one, Cleveland Guardians rotation is about to get real interesting real quick. I know we've talked about it, like kind of whispered about it. You know, Tanner Bibee comes up, Logan Allen comes up. Sweet. Now Hunter Gaddis is filling in when Battenfield got hurt. McKenzie's making another rehab start, and it could be his last if everything goes well. He's supposed to return Tuesday, Wednesday-ish for Cleveland. Aaron Civale, who's supposed to be back pretty soon as well. We already know Cal Quantrill has been a mess. I have my thoughts on how this should play out. I don't know if it will play out, but how do you assess this Cleveland situation that all of a sudden has too many starting pitchers?
Yeah, I mean, we knew this was coming, right? Like, we talked about this when Bibee was brought up, when Logan Allen was brought up. We weren't sure exactly when. There are pretty much 6 guys for 5 spots, the way I see it. I don't really think, I mean, you mentioned like Battenfield. Hunter Gaddis is pitching this weekend. I think that's very much temporary. I don't see those guys as rotation pieces. But you've got 6 guys. You've got Shane Bieber, you've got Logan Allen, you've got Quantrill, you've got Bibee, you've got McKenzie, and you've got Civale. So, like, what should the Guardians do? Like, I think Cal Quantrill needs to be the odd man out there. And I actually think that's my guess as to what will happen, because Cleveland already kind of showed that they did the right thing moving Plesac out of the rotation. He's no longer a factor. I hope it's Quantrill out and Civale, McKenzie in. I just, you know, Cy Civale, Bloomboard's
your boy. Bloomboard
legend. Needs some run. So that's what I hope happens. I'd be shocked if it was Bibee out. I think he's there. Logan Allen has pitched okay. I saw you and I think Ben Tidd were talking on Twitter. It was just a rough start this week when Logan Allen was cruising through 6 and then went out for the 7th and wasn't that great. But I think Logan Allen's safe, which isn't that the worst, like when they come back out.
Yeah, like I'm working and I see, oh, 6 strong, sweet. And I come back to my phone, I'm like, what just happened? Like, please tell me he got taken out.
It's the anti-JP Sears that we had this
season. Yes, man, yeah, we don't want to get into that.
That's another
sore subject right now. But yeah, this is,
what do you think? I mean, do you think they'll move Quantrill out? I
think so.
Trending well for him.
No, the 2 options. It's either Quantrill, because he still has 2 options. It's funny. Bieber technically has 2 options as well, and he's been garbage. But Quantrill will be the one to go. There's no way Bieber's the one to go. I'm not stupid. But Quantrill should go to AAA with Plesac. That should be where he should end up. I've also heard rumors, though, just through Twitter rumors, of course. They might put Civale in the bullpen.
Yeah, that would suck.
That would suck for Cy Civale, of course. Savali's better than Quantrill, and we can all agree upon that. That's pretty clear. So I don't know why they would want to do that, except maybe give more depth to their bullpen, because you do have young pitchers like Allen and Bibee, so you'll need maybe some longer relief options from time to time. So that is something to think about for the long term. But in a perfect world, Quantrill gone. That's just the way it should go. We'll see, though. Like I said, McKenzie's supposed to be back Tuesday, Wednesday next week. Savali should be back close around then, give or take. Mm-hmm. And when you're setting your NFBC lineups on Monday morning, good luck. Good luck on that. That'll be fun to see where it all slots in.
I want to see Savali's still. So I was wondering, like, for Fab this weekend, Savali's 100% owned in main events, 50% in 12 teamers in NFBC. That's actually a lot more than I thought.
I dropped him in all my 12s a while back.
I would have dropped him in 12s, and yeah. I am Savali.
So Mike, I was with you, and he was pitching. He had a couple great starts that supported it, and it's just like in a 12, not going to happen. So yeah,
I'd scoop him up though in Fab this weekend. I do think
he's a target of mine.
And again, this is almost broken record territory, but like rotations, five guys will not be healthy altogether at the same time for very long. So like, no matter what happens, whoever's healthy will probably pitch in the rotation going forward. It's just who's the next to fall, who's the next to get hurt. I mean, Bieber, there might be something going on beneath the surface there. You don't wish that on anybody, but like I could see something happening there.
I actually made a comment on the Friday episode of Quick Hits that I already recorded because he's on Friday's slate. I said, Bieber's basically Alec Manoah, but he hasn't gotten blown up yet. because he's pitching all kinds of contact. He's not striking dudes out. He just hasn't given up the runs like Manoah has. I said, it's coming, and it might be the Cardinals on Friday. Just throwing it out there.
That's a little harsh, my man. But
we're bold tonight. This is what's happening. We're making claims. We're planting flags.
It's a little harsh. Yeah,
Manoah's horrific. Like when you have a 6+ ERA and a 6+ xFIP, you're not pitching well. There's no way around that one.
Five walks today. He pitched today or yesterday.
Oh. It was today against the Rays. The Rays had their fun with him as well. So, yeah, not good. Last bit of news I have. I will say we won't dig into it. Nolan Jones is getting called up by the Rockies again. Hopefully they play him this time. Just throwing it out there. But he's been playing well in AAA. The one I wanted to discuss, though, is Jake McCarthy. He's coming back to Arizona. This is a fun one because Fletcher played well in his time, kind of started to slow down of late. McCarthy got sent down to AAA on April 27th. He's been down there for 22 games. He's hit .333 with 9 extra base hits, including 4 homers, 17 runs scored, 17 RBIs, 11 walks, which was good to see, and 4 stolen bases. So 4 homers and 4 steals, hitting .333 over 22 games. That's called get your mind right. And I'm thinking this is a great spot to come back. He gets the Angels this week, and he gets Chris Sale on Friday night. He might not even start with the lefty-lefty situation.
I'm surprised. Yeah. I'd be surprised if he's starting.
100%. But we're going to get some McCarthy this weekend. And again, we actually have the page up because we'll use it for our game. In 12s, at least, Jake McCarthy is only 19% rostered. So have fun, folks. That would be a guy I would look to target this weekend. Any thoughts on that situation?
Yeah, no, especially if you need bags. I mean, you don't need to be that old to remember what Jake McCarthy did in the second half last year with a pretty much game-changing stolen base total. I still think playing time is going to be a little bit of an issue. So we alluded to like the Chris Sale thing. I don't think Jake McCarthy plays against lefties. I mean, it's still somewhat crowded there. Like you've got lefty Paven Smith in right field. You've got Corbin Carroll, who's obviously not going anywhere. You've got Lourdes Gurriel, who, what a rebound. He's not going anywhere. Yeah. So you've got like 4 outfielders and Paven Smith and McCarthy are the same head in this. Like, I don't know. I guess, I mean, roster resource has Evan Longoria as a DH, but I don't know. So maybe I'm overplaying it and McCarthy will play regularly, but I still, lefties was an issue last year. So I don't know, but I still like you made some really good points about how he has looked in AAA. I think like a 9% barrel rate, 12% K rate. Like that's a pretty damn good combo in AAA. Yep. So maybe it was just something where he needed to get right and now he's back and it's McCarthy time. So I'd be very interested in 12 teamers again, especially if you need those bags.
Yeah, and I'd say with before McCarthy was sent down, Paven was kind of a DH rotation platoon with Longoria, so I could see that coming back to if McCarthy's performing. Yeah. Paven Smith is not stopping him. Let's put it that way. That's
maybe I like Paven Smith too much.
I like
there's
him
always
too.
Some Trust guys me. Who like
yeah you're just stuck to him doing? For some unknown reason. You're just
exactly. Yes. What's Paven Smith doing? Paven Smith's good, man.
He's been good. He has been good. There's no denying that. It's just, yeah, I know what you're saying though about the certain guys. they just keep popping up.
Yeah.
Last thing I'll say, and we don't need to go into this at all, is people, Michael Conforto, he's healthy and it's glorious. That's all I'm going to say. It's absolutely amazing to watch a healthy Michael Conforto once again. That's my Giants bias for the evening. But yeah, he's rostered everywhere, so don't even think about that one.
Saved your Giants from the claws of defeat by Julio Teheran, of all pitchers.
I took like a 20 minute nap on my couch, and I woke up and it was the fifth inning, and I'm like, how is it still 0-0?
He was cruising.
What are we doing? Yeah. It's
like what are we doing? Like, legitimately, I think he had like 4 Ks, 1 walk through 5 innings.
He's throwing his changeup beautifully, like locating it like outside the zone, getting chases. I was like, what the heck is going on right now? Is this 2018?
Like, he had not officially signed until like
a couple days
today, like a couple hours ago.
Yeah, it was like the rumor was a couple days ago. They made it official like right before the game. It was like, what in the world?
I don't know. Yeah, I my jaw dropped when I heard you saying Julio Teheran is pitching today.
Yep, it's happening. Well, let's get your
job. Yes, Conforto, yes.
I just wanted to bring him up.
That's worthy of a shout-out, given where he's been injury-wise.
His month of May is ridiculous. Real quick, though, to make your jaw drop again, do you want to recap last week's weekly matchups? Maybe give the scoreboard update by chance?
No. but I will, because I'm a professional. Consummate pro. You nuked me. You nuked me on the pitching side. Brandon Belock, that was a call. That was a call, man. I think 9 strikeouts last week got you 13 points. And again, we're taking one pitcher, one hitter each weekend. Innings plus Ks minus earned runs. So Belock, I don't know, went like 5 or 6 innings, gave up a couple runs, but the 9 Ks were huge. Carlos Carrasco, I think I texted you the picture. I think he gave up 3 runs before he got his second out.
Yeah.
So we were quickly trending into Jose Suarez territory from a couple of weeks ago, but Carrasco did somewhat rebound and get me positive points, but it was nowhere near on the pitching side. And actually, Carrasco, tonight we were just talking about Kyle Hendricks, the other side of that matchup and pitched pretty well tonight for what it's worth. But that doesn't count in the game. So you beat me on the pitcher side. Hitter side, your Gavin Sheets part 2. Went exactly the same as part 1, got to 3 points, but it was again enough to beat my 2 points from Oswaldo Cabrera. So season long update, Bubba, you're up 9-4, slipping away a little bit. I gotta get some sweeps here.
Yeah, this is going to be really painful when it's the final week of the season and we're tied up. I can already see this one coming, so I'm going to enjoy it while I can. This week's a fun one because last week we kind of joked about the pitching was just horrific. Like there were not very many options at all, period. And there's always a handful of hitting options. And that's kind of to the landscape of what we have going on. There was I wrote down at least 3 pitching options I could have went with this week, which is nice. Tons of hitters. Would you like to talk about the best matchups of the week real quick?
Yeah, sure. So like, and we use the HQ hitter report for this, but there's Coors. I mean, that's always a Coors check. I think this is the first full week.
Yep.
Of Coors. So we're getting the back half of that. And so the Mets are in Coors. Atlanta and Philly is a big series. HQ, it's funny, like Atlanta has the easiest matchups and Philly has the toughest. So wonder how that's going to shake out. But Atlanta gets 3 Philly righties. I think it's it's Taijuan Walker, Zach Wheeler, and Dylan Covey. So like I almost picked Eddie Rosario this week.
He was on my list.
I mean, any Braves lefty. I think Rosario is the only like platoon lefty that they have, but I think Eddie Rosario is a great play, and any Atlanta lefty against that crew this weekend is good. San Diego lefties, and this will lean into my pick. San Diego lefties face 3 righties at New York at Yankee Stadium, and so you get the short porch. You also get seems to happen every week where I pull up the RotoWire grid and I see R. Vasquez, and I don't even know who that is.
He's a rookie.
I think he's making his debut.
Yep, 24-year-old. Horrible ratios. He walks a lot of guys, but he has a hell of a curveball and can get strikeouts. That's about it. Okay. That's what I got out of him on my little report I read earlier.
So you've got Vasquez and then Severino, Cole. So, like, I don't know. Actually, Cole hasn't been all that lately. But any kind of San Diego lefty, especially with that in that park, is pretty good. So I actually went with, to segue that, I went with Matt Carpenter this week for that reason. I think he'll, I mean, Carpenter is playing every single day against right-handed pitching. And you throw that short porch on top of it. I don't know. Hopefully be better than Joey Weimer. And
be pretty pumped on this one.
Oswaldo Cabrera. I feel pretty good about this one. I do. Much better than last week. If the listeners last week, I was not confident at all. I actually just ran out of time and picked Carrasco. So I don't know.
We're good. We're good. My hitter for the week, Washington Nationals have a decent schedule against Kansas City. They get Lyles, Springer, and then potentially Daniel Lynch, who's actually been pitching really well in AAA. We've seen that story before, so I'm looking forward to seeing how it transitions to the bigs. But I went with Jaime Candelario. He's been hitting second for the Nats. He's a switch hitter, and he's been hitting pretty darn well. He actually had a double on Thursday in their day game. But if you just look at the month of May, he's hitting almost 290 with 9 or 10 extra base hits, striking out about 17.5% of the time. A lot of multi-hit games. So I'll take my chances with the Candyman, Jaime Candelario. And he's also walking about 7.5% of the time. So, yeah, I went Candelario in this one. I was looking for a guy that was towards the top of the lineup that should, unless he's just getting a random day off, play all three games. Mm-hmm. And I love anybody that can face Brady Singer. So that's a positive.
Candyman, like, I have him on a lot of drafting holds. I have him in tout words. He's just one of those guys where, like, mm-hmm. not sexy, but he plays every day. The team isn't that great, but, like, he quietly, I mean, hitting 260, six homers, 8 barrels, like,
doing his thing.
Actually pretty good.
Yep, he's doing his thing. Pitching side of things, I'll lead the way here. I was actually surprised he was available to pick this week.
Yeah.
Big Vinny V, Vinny Velasquez, and I triple-checked the roster rates on this one. He is 22% rostered in 12 teams leagues because he was on the IL. He had a good rehab start recently. He's pitching Sunday against the Seattle Mariners. And Vinny V, before the start, he left early against Tampa Bay with an injury. It was 6 shutouts, 7 shutouts, 6 or 3 earned, 6 shutouts, 6 or more, or 5 or more Ks in all of those starts. And now he gets a Seattle Mariners team who can be potent from time to time, but more often than not lately, they're scoring like 2 or 3 runs, striking out a decent amount of times. So I'm going Vinny V. I feel confident in this one, so that means he's getting destroyed on Sunday. Like most of these picks each week, it's like, okay, just survive. I actually like this pick a lot, and it's going to end poorly, I can tell.
He definitely slipped off my radar. I just can't get – I mean, I talked about Pavin Smith, someone who I think is better than he actually is. It's the other way with Vinny V, man. God, but I don't know. Hunter Gaddis, for me, we kind of alluded to him earlier. I think this is his swan song in the Cleveland rotation, at least for now. But 4 Ks his last start against the White Sox, 6 scoreless. So there is that. In the majors, kind of funny. Like there's a big minor league, major league split with Hunter Gaddis. Misses a ton of bats, gets Ks in the minors. Just hasn't translated in the majors yet. I mean, he hasn't had a whole lot of opportunity to do so. But pitching well, goes against St. Louis, which is, I don't know. They do pretty well against right-handers, so there is that. Unless I'm streaming St. Louis lefties, who'd I stream this week? Burleson,
yeah,
in a lot of leagues and has done nothing. So
that's been a trend lately, by the way. I'll just mention when I talked with Curlin earlier in the weeks, it was like a week ago was the Jake Bowers week because of all the righties that Yankees are facing, and he does nothing.
Yeah, didn't do anything.
There's been a few guys. I did the Nick Prado, Mike Massey thing because they actually were playing well, had great matchups, very limited production. It was just kind of a you can do the right process, like the whole Roto-Wear t-shirt process over results. It was definitely the right process, results not so much. So.
Yeah, Owen Miller is the counterpoint to that this week, who's absolutely mashing. But life of a streamer.
Yep, life of a streamer. But yeah, it'll be fun. I like Gaddis a lot. I've picked him up a couple times earlier in the year, and he was for streaming options. I think he's a good one. And honestly, I'd rather have him than Cal Quantrill if I'm the Cleveland Guardians. So keep that one in mind. We'll see how that goes.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance, because you'll feel protected no matter how the wind blows. Also, you can keep enjoying the home of your dreams. And our expert agents can help you save up to 23% when you bundle home with auto. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
All right, Bloom Board's time. Let's have some fun here. Another good one. And I get, it was funny, Ryan sends the Bloom Board, and I'm like, looking at them, huh, this is different than usual. And I look at it some more. I'm like, this is actually pretty fun, because some of them, it's like there's information that's kind of like an obvious why type situation. This one's not it. This one just makes you look more, which is what these are for, which is really good. And so it's two boards, fly ball and then ground ball gainers from last year to this year, obviously. So some guys that are hitting more fly balls, some guys that are hitting more ground balls, some with some pretty severe differences. He also included exit velocity on the chart, but I'll let you kind of lead in with this and then we'll start talking players.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, this one's interesting because there's nuance to this, and I think it's pretty fun to talk about. So we talk about like launch angle changes all the time, and it's like, to me, sometimes a launch angle change is like just always signifying a good thing. And that's not always the case. Like, you've got different profiles of hitters. You got speedsters, you got power hitters, you got guys who are hitting the ball hard, not hitting the ball hard. You don't want Victor Robles, I'm just pulling examples. You don't want a launch angle improvement or a launch angle gain from Victor Robles. You want someone like that to hit the ball on the ground. One guy, and we just pulled the board up for the viewers, like an Adelis Garcia, who just hits the crap out of the ball. That is someone who obviously you don't want hitting ground balls. And so like to see Adelis Garcia on here go from 40% fly ball rate to 47%, and that's why I have exit velocity on here, is if you pair that with hard contact, that's when you really get the gains. It's not just hitting more fly balls. Fly balls have like by far the worst chance of being a hit compared to ground balls, line drives. You got to do something with it. So that's just kind of one of my things, is like, I hear, you know, launch angle, higher launch angle. Sometimes that's not a good thing. And so it just kind of depends on which hitter. So what we did for this board, and I tweeted out before the show, but again, on YouTube or on Twitter, when we're streaming this, you can kind of look through it with us, is I took the top 12 gainers in fly ball rate and the top 12 gainers in ground ball rate, and then through kind of color coded exit velocity, just to see who's hitting the ball hard and who's not, to kind of go from there. And then I guess the last thing that I'd say is, a lot of times these fly ball, ground ball changes, especially to this degree, does signify like a change in approach for a hitter. And I think with those types of things, you can trust a little bit more of the results of what we're seeing so far this year, because it is a change in approach. So it's kind of the last piece that I have there. It's a fun one, I think.
It is a fun one. And it's the first thing that stands out to me. And this has been a trend on a lot of your, especially hitting boards, so far this year, and it makes sense because they're the best team in baseball.
Yes.
But the fly ball trends, the Tampa Bay Rays, Christian Bethencourt, Brandon Lau, Randy Arozarena, So three of basically like your top seven,
three of the top
eight. Yep. Are just, yeah. Like our Tampa Bay Rays. That's been I can't remember the other ones we did, but that's been a trend with the Rays on some of these boards, which checks out, like you said, with production. And I'll just kind of group them together. And if you want to break them down, you can. But like you got Betancourt, 35 to 45% fly ball, but a 92.4% exit velo. Brandon Lau, 41 to 51, 91.2%. And then the man, you know, the MVP, Randy Rosarena, 33 to 41.
I just look for excuses to put the Randy man on here for you.
I don't even pay Ryan to do this. He just throws Randy on the boards for me because it's like my dude that is crushing everything right now. Another stolen base on Thursday. And he's hitting an almost 93% exit velo, or anything mile per hour exit velo, sorry. So I don't know if you want to, like, we don't have to dive into all of them if you want. I think the Lau one's interesting though, because his production is not great. Like the power's there, but the batting average isn't. We're like Betancourt, especially as a catcher too. Totally great, like really good. Randy, I say it sarcastically, but he is one of the MVP candidates at this point in time. It's legit. They're both being really good. So I guess it's like a yin and a yang at the same time. Like you have two doing really, really good stuff. Then Brandon Lau, who the power's there, which you'd expect seeing this, the fly ball and the exit velocity, but the overall production is not there for Brandon Lau.
Yeah, and that's where, like I said, with nuance and that sort of thing. So a higher fly ball rate with the quality of contact, the hard contact that Brandon Lau is making, like I'm not surprised. He has already matched last season's home run total and 100 fewer plate appearances. However, it's a 51% fly ball rate. That's extreme. Even if you are like a semi power hitter, I'd say Brandon Lau's a power hitter, I guess.
I'd call him a power hitter. Yeah.
Yeah. That's still pretty extreme in terms of like batting average. That's not going to help. But the big thing with Brandon Lau is the K rate. The K rate's right back to where it was before 2022, which is not a good thing. Brandon Lau is striking out 29% of the time. So you take basically a 30% K rate and a 50% fly ball rate.
Boom.
That's why you have a, what's he hitting? 200. He's right at 200. Yeah. And so, and that's also why, like you say, I mean, you can say, yes, Brandon Lau is a 233 BABIP. He's been unlucky, whatever. That's kind of why he has a 233 BABIP.
You have a little BABIP when you hit 50 fly balls.
Exactly.
That's just how it goes.
So, again, and maybe like for the Rays, I mean, Brandon Lau gets on base a lot, so he has a really good walk rate. Like maybe the Rays don't, I know the Rays don't care about batting average. If the OBP is there and the power is there, like I'm sure they're totally happy with Brandon Lau making this change. Christian Bethancourt, I do want to highlight for a little bit just cause like, I don't think he gets much pub, man, but like he is, especially a catcher, like. Yep. I mean, these are some of the best skills of any catcher in baseball. And I feel like he does not get talked about that much. The big thing with Bethancourt, he's on the board because his fly ball rate went from 35 to 45% with a 92 mile an hour exit velocity, like an elite exit velocity. So you pair that, and 45% fly ball it's high, but it's not like crazy. So he hasn't gone totally overboard with it. Still hitting excellent contact, the plate skills are there. Like he is, I don't know, I think really underrated as a catcher.
Yeah, I'm with you. I know early in the preseason, because all my ridiculous catcher work, I talked about him a lot, because when he was with Oakland, he played first base a lot, came over to Tampa Bay, caught a lot, and people were like trying to figure out how he would play, and I'm like, Tampa loves him as a catcher. He's actually going to play more than you think. And he was productive last year at 252, at 11 homers. And I believe it was five stolen bases. Yeah, five stolen bases. He hadn't even stole a base this year. But, like, digging in deeper, he had a better max EV last year than this year. So there might be another level, or just because of the launch angle change, it's affecting the total quality. Who knows? Still very good quality, because his barrel rate's up 4% from last year. His hard hit rate's up 7.5% from last year. So he's doing all these things well. His BABIP's down, obviously, like we talked about, because he's in more fly balls. So that's limiting that situation of it. But as a whole, he's a really good hitter. I know, like, Yancey Eaton and I joked one day, because a lot of like Yancey Eaton's teams, not just being a homer, he has Jonah Heim and Betancourt as his two catchers. And
yeah, that'll play.
Those two guys were both my catcher two targets. Like, I have, if you look at a lot of my rosters, I have a ton of Jonah Heim. He was my most rostered player, actually, in all the NFBC leagues after draft time. If I couldn't get Heim, I wanted Betancourt. Like, that was where I was leaning on things. It's nice when it plays out like this. Obviously, we could have a whole other conversation where at other positions where it didn't play out like this, but I agree with you. It was kind of interesting because where I'm going with this is you said not enough people are talking about him, where I was like, the writing was kind of on the wall for at least a productive catcher too. And it wasn't talked about enough. I'm 100% with you. And I probably didn't even talk about it enough like I should have. So it's interesting to see the development he's making and to see where it keeps changing and if it can sustain.
It might have been playing time related too. Like I'm trying to think back, like maybe because with Mejia there, maybe I.
Oh, that's what a lot of it was.
Secondary catcher, but yeah.
Yeah, it's working out so far. A lot can change, especially at catchers. Guys' production diminishes as the season goes on, so on and so forth. So we'll see. The next guy I wanted to bring up, though, because I've been just infatuated with so many former like top prospect guys that have flailed that have turned it on this season. And a lot of it's been health with Nick Senzel throughout his career. But even when he's been healthy, it's kind of been lackluster performance from what you expect from him from the, you know, the hype train that he was on. And he's a guy that the fly ball rate's gone from 31 to 41% over the last year. Hard hit rate's at 87.9 miles per hour, which is very strong. And so far, he's hitting 256 with four homers and four stolen bases. That might not sound great, but he's striking out less than 20% of the time. And he's just looks like a healthy, different ball player right now. So when you look at Nick Senzel, does anything stand out to you when you see this change at the plate?
No, I mean, you covered it pretty well. To be able to, again, not sell out for it, like we were talking about Brandon Lau, you can hit more fly balls with decent power. I mean, the exit velo is okay for Senzel. But in that park, fly balls do some damage at small park. So the other big thing with Senzel, I know this isn't this board related, but 4 out of 5 stolen bases. Yep. Again, just kind of you get that green light for someone who with Senzel's injury history is just a really good sign that he's healthy. And the post-type prospect thing is a real thing. No matter how kind of far we are in someone's career, Nick Senzel was, I think, drafted number 2 overall, was a top 10 fantasy prospect for quite some time for a reason. It's been so derailed by injury. So I hope for his sake it keeps going. But everything checks out really well under the hood for Senzel in that park. The power I don't fully believe in, but in that park, fly balls can work. So
yep. He could – okay, I might be getting too bold with this.
Yeah, you've been bold all night. Let's go.
With that ballpark, that's the caveat. He could have a Brandon Drury type performance. I'll say that much because Drury's a guy we didn't expect a ton of power from either, but I could see a similar approach in that regard. So I kind of wanted to like not go crazy with it, but I wouldn't be shocked if you saw 15-ish to 20 home runs potentially by the end of the year with a 15-20 steals. That could be a pretty solid go.
Yeah, I mean, Drury did have like 41 barrels last year. Senzel only has 5 so far. It's a decent comp though. It's Drury with maybe not as many bombs, but more bats. Just a
prize performance, maybe something along those lines. Yep. This one's for Little Cheesecake himself, Art Tarnabang.
Hey.
Sorry, I screwed up, Art. I apologize. I love you, bud. He says he loves seeing Jorge Soler healthy and mashing. That was the next guy I wanted to mention here. 40 to 49% change in fly ball, 91.2%. Or mile, he's at 91.2 mile per hour X velocity. He had his 15th home run of the season on Thursday in Coors Field of all places. But he's hitting 261 on the year, which obviously, if you know Jorge Soler, nuts. 24% K rate, 15 homers. Month of May has been very, very good for Jorge Soler. Soler was a guy a couple years ago was struggling. Everyone looked at his Statcast numbers like he's due, and then he's crushed when he went to Atlanta. He had some down seasons. The one last thing I thought was a cool caveat. I took a screenshot from Twitter, and then it's all yours after this. I want to tell you this stat because it blew me away. So on this season.
I think I know where you're going with it.
2023, at bats for home run versus left-handed pitching, Jorge Soler leads the history of Major League Baseball per season at 4.6 at-bats per home run versus lefty. So if he has a 5 at-bat game versus a lefty, he's hitting a home run. Just put that in mind. It's like better than 20% of the time he's going deep versus a lefty. The next four people on that list was McGuire in 95. I don't know if you remember that year. I think it was a lot of home runs that season. Bagwell in 94, a lot of home runs that season too. That took place. Barry Bonds in 2002. I think he hit a bunch of home runs that season. And then Marcelo Zuna somehow checks the list here. But that's the top 5 in the history of Major League Baseball versus left-handed pitching. Jorge Soler leads in 2023. So I'm going to leave it at that. What do you think about the gains?
Yeah, that's wild. I mean, we knew Soler has Love the lefties. Raw power. Like, but to pair that with what's the fly ball rate? I got distracted.
It's 40 to 49% change.
40 to 49. So someone like 49 again is a lot, but Soler is like, I would say, like a superpower hitter. I mean, this is a guy who has hit almost 50 home runs in a season. So to see him do this is pretty wild. And you're not getting batting average with Jorge Soler, but the strikeout rate, 25%. Like, it's not great, but
for him it's good.
For him, it's decent. If you do a 25% K rate with that power, he could hit 240, 250. And you pair that with someone who I think legitimately has 40, 45 home run power. He's going to play Miami. I mean, who else are they going to throw out there? So it's looking really good for Soler. This fly ball change, I think, kind of proves that and at least hints that this can keep going for some time.
He has after today's game in Coors, he has a 299 ISO on the season. That is just insanity. Insanity.
And he's playing against right-handers.
Like, he's playing against both sides. That's what I'm saying.
He's not God against lefties.
Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, you hear certain people always say, you can't use batter versus pitcher. Splits don't matter. I'm sorry, but if I see that number, splits matter at some point. Like, that matters to me. And then I said his May has been very good. This is where doing DFS comes in handy, seeing these kind of splits. But his month of May, he's hitting 286 with 10 home runs, just destroying baseballs. It's insane what Jorge Soler is doing right now.
And still only 31 years old. I would have guessed guessed higher.
Yeah, I'm with you. So like, he's been here for a long, long time. Yeah, a guy that is older, he'll be 33 later this year. I want to take us to a negative one for a second, is Chris Taylor. Just want to bring him up. Mm-hmm. He's gone from 43% fly ball to 54% fly ball, 87.5 mile per hour exit velocity. This is a guy striking out almost 37% of the time. He's hitting at 191, 7 homers and 4 steals. What do you got on Chris Taylor? It's been brutal.
Yeah, this is what you don't want to see going from 43 to 54% fly ball rate. I've made the Ryan Schimpf joke in the past. This is almost to that territory. But again, you pair those fly balls with the K rate. The K rate's just absolutely brutal, and he's not making, at least this season. Chris Taylor has had some pop in the past. I've actually kind of liked him for just some power, speed, and position eligibility, but this season with that 87.5 mile an hour exit velo, like, you cannot hit the ball that lightly that often in the air. So like, it's good. I'm glad you brought up a couple negative guys, because the top two guys on this list are Jace Peterson and Chris Taylor. And yeah, it's like, man, is this really a list you want to be on? It all depends on how hard you hit the ball. Charlie Blackman is another one who, like, going from 34% fly ball to 42% with the lack of quality in his contact, that's not something I really want to see either.
No. I'm going to move to the ground ball side of things, because I don't think we need to talk about Josh Naylor again. Like, we all know how we feel on Josh Naylor around these parts, but the improvements have been good to see. Let's go to the ground ball side of things. And this is where it gets really interesting to me, because you look at guys that may be declining in power, but their batting average could be going up because they're putting the ball on the ground more. So the BABIP could be going up, which we kind of talked about the opposite taking place with fly balls. So I'm going to put my homer hat on right off the gate here. And we're going to go with Lamont Wade Jr., because I've been talking about him a lot lately. He was a guy that 2 years ago, when the Giants made their crazy postseason run, was outstanding. You know, 253, 18 homers, 6 steals. Last year was horrific, 207. 8 homers, 1 steal, but he saw his BABIP drop 55%, basically. Well, that BABIP's back up to 296, which is above his 2021 season. He's hitting 260. He's actually, after tonight, where he had 3 more hits.
I think he had 3 hits tonight, yeah.
He's 277 with 7 homers and 2 steals. He stole a bag tonight as well. He's also walking almost 19% while striking out 17%. I'm going to throw that out there. He's a big OBP guy. That's why he's leading off. But what he's doing with the Bloom board, you can see here, ground ball rate from 32 to 43%, 88 mile per hour exit velocity. So he's making it a point to not hit it in the air so much, hit it more on the ground, and being a really good leadoff hitter. So this is one of those where I think it was a beneficial thing for Lamont Wade. But what do you have when you're looking at him?
I agree. I think this is more just Lamont Wade. Like Lamont went a little overboard last year with it, with the 50% fly ball rate. You just want to see that a little bit more like mellowed out, a little bit more average, because Lamont Wade, I mean, he's got some pop, but he's not a Jorge Soler. He's not someone you want hitting the ball in the air 50% of the time. So this is a lot better version of Lamont Wade, especially like you said, Bubba, leading off with walking almost one fifth of the time. Like I do wish he would steal a little bit more. I think he did get the steal today. I think that's his second
yeah,
on the season. So you want to see a little bit more of that from a fantasy standpoint, but this is a change that's really good because he's still hitting for some power with the 7 homers, 176 plate appearances. And it's just, again, like I said, kind of normalizing out that flyball rate so it's not so extreme. This is a much better spot for Wade to be in with the 43% ground ball, 38% flyball. It's much more normal.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. It's one of the good ones here. Let's look at this name, though, because I know it's a guy we both had a lot of shares of last year until he got hurt. Tim Anderson, 55% ground ball rate, up to 66, almost two-thirds of the time he's hitting the ball on the ground. If you want to play Ryan's other game, he's striking out 19% of the time. So you want to do some more quick math on that one. Like 85-ish, I'm just quick on top of it, 85% of the time it's a ground ball or a strikeout. Less than ideal for a guy that's hitting .244 on the season with zero home runs and 6 stolen bases. So what's your takeaway when looking at Tim Anderson? Because this is not pretty.
And that's why he's got zero home runs. I mean, that is the answer. I think Tim Anderson's going to be fine. I worry a little. Like, I don't think anyone can really hold a 66% ground. Like, that's actually really hard to do. Tim Anderson has been hurt and only has 130 at-bats. I think the cutoff I used for this was 100. So he's pretty close to that minimum cutoff where it's still kind of noisy. Maybe this is my Pavin Smith syndrome again. Maybe I just love Tim Anderson too much. But from what I see, like, the contact is the same as its K rate's up a little bit, but more or less the same. He's running. He's got 6 steals, 6 for 7, a few more before he got hurt. But I don't know. I think it'll even out a little bit. The exit velo is pretty good, actually. 89 for Tim Anderson. That's not bad. So I'm not too worried. The only problem with Tim Anderson is, like, you know he's going to get hurt again.
Yep.
So you need... When you drafted Tim Anderson, you knew he was going to get hurt. You also knew, or you thought you knew, you'd get Tim Anderson production while he was healthy. And we're missing out on that right now. And that's tough.
Yeah, that's the struggle bus right there, is he's healthy now and he's not producing. And you're not sitting him. So it's a rough spot on your roster right now. Let's talk Josh Bell. 50% ground ball rate to 60%. He's a guy we already talked about even in preseason. He hits it on the ground too much, but it's like, if he manages here, he's been successful in the 50% range. Now he's up to 10%, and he still has a 90.2 mile per hour exit velo, which is not bad at all, but 3 home runs on the season. He's hitting .226. When you look at his Statcast numbers, the barrel rate's the same as last season. Hard hit rate's actually better than last season. Mm-hmm. Yep. So this is literally like a small tweak away, I think, from a potential buy low on Josh Bell, if I'm wrong.
That's the thing, man. It's so frustrating, is like, he does make hard contact. I mean, I shouldn't say if he wants to. It's not just like you flip a switch and you start hitting the ball in the air. But the hard contact is there. And, you know, I mean, breaking news, you need to hit it hard and in the air to hit a home run. One of those two is a lot harder to do, and that's make consistently hard contact. And Josh Bell's doing that. So I do think it is like a tweak away situation where Josh Bell could, I'm not going to say like break out or whatever, but can he hit, I don't know, .260 with 20 home runs? Like, that would play. But you cannot hit the ball 60% of the time in the ground. Like, that is absolutely brutal. The other part of this is Cleveland, man. Cleveland has been, you know how many runs Josh Bell has scored this year?
I had it up already.
You probably have it up. It's in the single digits. It is 7.
It's bad.
7 runs, 3 home runs. for Josh Bell. No steals, hitting .226. It's really ugly. But the hard contact's there, so like, I'm not totally giving up on him. But even in 12 teamers, man, it's hard to roll with him.
Let's talk about a guy that I know, at least in some discords I'm in, people are frustrated with, and I tell them to calm down. It's Austin Riley. And this is a guy whose ground ball rate went from 38% to 47%, which for a big-time power hitter seems like a lot. 91.3 mile per hour exit velocity. He did hit two home runs on Thursday night, I will say that. But he's only hitting .264. He's got his nine homers, which is what you kind of expect. I think what people need to realize is the average you're getting now is more the Austin Riley we all expected before he had his 2021 season. I think the power is still going to be just fine in the 30 home run range more often than not. But the increased ground balls obviously will affect things. Honestly, with the increased ground balls, you'd almost expect, because his BABIP's pretty darn high, it's .328, you'd expect a better batting average, honestly. So when looking at a guy like Austin Riley, his barrel rate has dropped tremendously. That could correlate to the ground balls. What are you looking at with Austin Riley?
No, and you bring up I want to key in on that barrel rate point. To hit a barrel, just like I said, with a home run, you need to hit it hard and then the air. So if someone's ground ball rate is way up or their fly ball rate's way down, their barrel rate is probably going to be down as well, because you can't have a barrel that's a ground ball. So I think that's a really important, and I think, you know, something I hear a lot where you're almost kind of double counting things, where it's like, oh, his fly ball rate's down and his barrel rate is down. Well, that's
correlates.
It's kind of the same thing. So I'm not worried about Austin Riley. Like you said, the two homers tonight, I think there's still 40 home run power there. When we talked about Austin Riley, the reason I was off of him in draft season was you're getting no steals in a stolen base environment where a zero, it hurts even more than it has over the past couple seasons, and the batting average. Like, I do think Austin Riley, given the strikeout rate that we've seen from him, is more a .260 guy where he's at right now than certainly the .300 hitter we saw 2 years ago. And I think even the .273 or whatever he hit last year is a little bit over his head. So I don't know. I think if you expect like a .260 average with over a full season now of like 30-35, I think that's still in play. You just want to see, if your ground balls from Austin Riley. That's not someone who you want to see on the ground ball list.
Yeah, for sure. You want to see Willie Mays Hayes on the ground ball list, and not Austin Riley. This name's probably
Tony Kemp's on this thing. Jesus.
Yeah, that's true. There's your Willie Mays Hayes. I was gonna pick another kind of not so obvious name, but in deeper leagues, this guy has viability. That's David Peralta. Just because he's playing nearly every day for the Dodgers in the outfield. I was looking it up. He's playing almost every single day. He's gone from a 36% ground ball guy to a 52. That's the largest on this list. 90.6 mile per hour exit velo. It wasn't that long ago where Peralta was like he even had 12 home runs last year, honestly. He's never been a massive power guy, but batting average has been his thing. He only had .251 last year, .259 the year before. But those all came with massive BABIP drops. Still over .300, but compared to his usual. And this year, his BABIP's down to .234. He's hitting .209 with his increased ground ball rate. But what I wanted to bring up is the barrel rate's down 3%. Again, you'd expect that. But his hard hit rate's up 5% from last year. So he's hitting the ball harder. He's hitting it more times on the ground. His BABIP has fallen. It's just an interesting, like, and if you are an X-Stats person, his XBA is .244. His average is .209. So there could be a potential in deeper formats, someone to keep an eye on type situation.
Agreed. Yeah, he should. Peralta should not be hitting .209 the way with how often he's making contact, the hard contact, and on the ground. Like, yeah, HQ's expected BA is like .250. So there's that. The interesting thing, and this is where you can kind of fall into the trap of comparing one year to the next. David Peralta's, for most of his career, has been a 50% ground ball guy. Like, 2022 is actually the outlier here. So it's almost like he's going back to the Peralta that we saw in Arizona, which was like a 50% ground ball rate. I think he's had a 50% ground ball rate in like six or seven seasons. This is his eighth where it's been that high. So I think this is who David Peralta is, which again, in deep leagues, isn't a bad thing. I think you can get someone who hits .250, .260 with, again, some power. And in that lineup, the, you know, other than Josh Bell, in that lineup, that'll work. So,
Last guy I'll mention here, just because I think we have to, he's on the list, is Juan Soto. 47% ground ball to 57%, 92.8 mile per hour exit velo. I will say, because people get frustrated, like, oh, Soto this, Soto that. He's hitting 262, nine homers, five steals. In May, he's hitting 333 with four homers and four steals. Yep. Some guys are getting going. Let's put it that way. But the increased ground balls does stand out a bit. Still has the second best barrel rate of his career. Has the best hard hit rate by far of his career at 58.1%. I have zero concerns about Juan Soto at all. But the increased ground ball rate is interesting to see. I'll say that much.
Yeah, and I just checked because you mentioned May, and Soto has been on an absolute tear. The ground ball rate from April to May, pretty much unchanged, 57 to 54%. So he's still hitting a ton of ground balls on his heater. Juan Soto can basically do whatever he wants to. He can take walks. He can hit the ball on the ground. He can do whatever. I'm not worried about Juan Soto. And actually, I may. We'll see. It's very, very early. The number that interests me the most with Juan Soto is the number five, and that's how many steals he has this season. That was the big reason why I was off of Juan Soto.
You and I both. He's a favorite for both of us.
It was just like at the price, at a first round price. He didn't even attempt a steal with San Diego last year. So I was like, is he a zero? Like we were just talking about with Austin Riley, but not the case. He's already at five, which is really good to see. So, just mashing right now. So it looks good. You still don't want to see a 57% ground ball rate from Juan Soto. You want to see that go up a little bit. He's always going to be a ground ball guy. But let's do like 50 high 40s, not Josh Bellion territory.
Don't go to Tim Anderson, please. Stay away from that. Stop trending that direction. But anybody else on either board you'd like to discuss before we hit some listener questions? It's a fun board just because it kind of opens your eyes to the whole picture of the hitter, basically.
Yeah, I think that covers it pretty well. Man, a lot of the like red ground ball guys, it's a tough scene, man. Elidimus Diaz, Tony Kemp, Will Myers. One thing I would say, I wrote a piece on, and I'm actually a little surprised he has not shown up in the fly ball board. I did a piece on HQ about Yandy Diaz, who has increased his fly ball rate. With some of these guys, go to Fangraphs and look at their, this is the Toby special, but look at their kind of rolling averages over time and see what that ground ball fly ball looks like. Yandy Diaz's case, the fly ball improvements, and I put that in quotes, was like the first 2 weeks of the season, and then he snapped right back to where he was. But because those first like 2-3 weeks were so good on the fly ball rate, the season long number still looks pretty good. So rolling graphs are your friend with this thing, just to kind of see where these guys are trending within the season.
That's a great call. Great call on that one. Let's take a couple listener questions on the show here. We have Stephen P. He asked, and this is kind of a fun one because there's some second chance drafts coming up at NFBC. He says, question for the pod for you guys. What tools or methods do you guys use once in the draft room? He's a bit late, but it's been on his mind for a while. Did his first NFBC draft this year and was a bit overwhelmed in the first one. I was wondering if you guys could talk through tools, sheets, methods, etc. I remember Ryan posted two different versions of sheets he uses, so it's kind of been back in my mind for a while, but it would be great to you guys to cover it. And there are secondhand drafts coming up pretty soon, so you might need some tools again. I know, Ryan, you do some pretty detailed stuff, it feels like. So what do you got?
I do, but I try to, it's so hard to overcomplicate something. You have to think when you're in a draft, you have 50 seconds to make a pick. Once Dr. Roto snipes you and you get over that, then you really only have 30 seconds.
And you got some guy barking in your ear the whole time, making fun of it.
And you got Bubba laughing at you. So that cuts it down to about 20 seconds. There's so many numbers. We just talked about all kinds of numbers, ground ball, fly ball. I would not put those things on a draft sheet. Like, keep it very simple. You want, obviously, a ranking. I like to actually rank. I like to sort my list. Just a couple kind of quick tips. I like to sort my list by ADP just because those guys at the top are more likely to get drafted. And so they're easier to find, to just cross off your list or delete off your spreadsheet as they get picked. And then you can work down that way. I always love the highlight guys. I think that's pretty common. Highlight, bold, whatever. Guys that are your target. So as you're working down that ADP, you can say, here's the, you know, next two, three guys that I've highlighted that are more likely to be drafted than they were before. So there's that. The last thing I would say is, and most sites you can do this, but you can actually upload your rankings into the draft room ahead of time. And it's just a nice safeguard. If you time out or if you don't, you know, you're going to get someone who is highly ranked by your rankings. To preload the draft room with your rankings is really nice thing to do. And NFBC does have that functionality. If you have questions about that, I'm happy to help you and show you how I did it. But those are probably the big things. Simplicity is being the most. I might have to dust off that draft sheet, man. I don't know. They're dangling the carrot.
NFBC. I'm trying to stay away, but then I have people like you that send me pictures of it and stuff. And I've had other guys go, hey, there's a Friday night show, and I don't have my daughter this Friday. So I'm thinking, I could probably do a Friday night draft. What else am I going to do on Friday night? I got waiver wire stuff I can do. I can do it at the same time, right? So yeah, I'll probably end up jumping in something. I don't want to though.
Do a gladiator. I'll probably do a gladiator. I don't want another fab league. I just don't have the time on Sundays.
No, not a chance.
I think they're offering two only. Fab leagues and one gladiator. So
yeah, no overalls. Just the little league. Have some fun. A little more skin in the game. Just the little bit I do, and I'm like the most probably simple guy you'll ever hear when it comes to this. And I think a lot of it's because I do too many podcasts and write too many things that I do all my researching that way. And then I have my own rankings. I usually walk into a draft with either my rankings on my computer, or if I'm in the NFBC room, I upload my rankings. That's all I use. I literally just sit there and use the draft room because like one of the best things I think we've ever done, at least for me, is when we did those pocket podcasts, it helped me so much in drafting. I already knew like what I was looking to target as we drafted. I didn't even need to be like panicking. I was like, okay, I know I need to get these type of players or these type of stats, but it made it so much easier for me. Now,
who knows? If you're at that level, that's. I will say I do add on my sheet that the actual only numbers that I have on there is projected home runs, batting average, and steals, just so I can see like bout from category wise. But if you're in like points leagues, you don't even
need that.
I wouldn't even put projections on your draft sheet. Just keep it extremely simple.
Yep, 100%. First, I thought this was a troll account. It still might be, but the name is Pepper My Pickle. 12-team head-to-head 5x5. Would you prefer Ketel Marte or Miguel Vargas? They have pretty similar bad X projections for the rest of the season. I lean Ketel Marte still, just because of the pedigree. He's seen long enough. Miguel Vargas has shown signs of life, and then he disappears again. He's doing a massive rookie thing right now. He just hasn't settled in, and he might be better, but I'm going Ketel Marte. What about you?
Probably lean Marte, and I am not a Marte guy, but has quietly had a really good season.
Yep.
Always been a really good contact guy. That has not changed. Ketel Marte already has 13 barrels, which is really good. He's running. That was a concern of mine. Ketel Marte not running. He's 4 for 4. So I'd go Marte, knowing that it's interesting that the bad X projection is similar, because Derek tends to not be as high on rookies. And Miguel Vargas already being a projection similar to Marte is interesting to me. But I think for this year, I'd go Ketel Marte. And that might be the last year I would want Marte over Miguel Vargas. I think Miguel Vargas is going to be a star. It just may not happen in 2023.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like long term, Vargas is your dude. Our buddy Corbin Young. I'm telling you, people, like, I don't just say this because it's, you know, HQ stuff. He does it for other websites as well. The dude is an amazing writer. He's a brilliant mind. So like, he's doing some cool stuff. I'd highly recommend checking out. He says, I see several rays on the left side. And then he says, this is for you, Ryan. Why is your Werf team so good?
So yeah, we talked about the Rays thing. I don't know, Werf. So Werf is, for those not familiar, these Earth whatever league. Started with your league with Barf, but it's basically Barf, regional leagues for writers or analysts.
Barf's Bay Area Roto Fantasy. So
yeah, Werf is Western expanse.
Yeah.
So it's like it's Oregon, Washington, Idaho. I don't know. We got.
They're in the Northwest. It should have been Nerf, but that was already the Northeast. So yeah, you're Worf.
Yeah. Why is my Worf team good? I don't know. I and this may go back to our draft prep question. The Worf draft was St. Patrick's Day night on Friday night at like I think it was that. 8 or 9 p.m. So I was pretty much in the bag by the time the draft started.
Just shooting from the hip.
I took Fernando Tatis. Like, I would not take Fernando Tatis. Logically.
Oh man, that's great.
It's kind of funny. Like, I took more risks than I normally would in a draft. It was kind of my my FOMO, my effort draft, whatever. And a couple of those guys have hit. So I don't think I'm leading the league anymore, but I'm up there. So Corbin's nice. A former champ. So I'll have to pick his brain.
There you go.
But yeah, that when I saw St. Patrick's night, I was a little nervous, but so far it's worked out.
So far, so good. Our last question is from Robbie Lester. He goes, Tim Anderson, 66%, like basically puke emoji. He says, what does Trey Turner look like? So I had that up right here. Surprisingly, he was 42.9% last year. He's 40.4%. He has a higher fly ball rate this year. It's the infield fly balls is what I'm seeing a lot of. That stands out. He actually ended Thursday's game with an infield fly ball out. So that's his thing right now.
And infield fly balls, from what I remember looking at this a couple years ago, it's pretty noisy. It's not as sticky as ground ball, fly ball. My little side, like I'm not worried about Trey Turner at all. Honestly, I think he will be. Yes, there's been some adjustment period, new team, new contract, all that thing. I think Trey Turner will be fine.
Yep, that sounds good to me. All right. Any final thoughts as we wrap up another episode of Bubba in the Bloom, episode 58, man, moving right along.
We are moving along. I don't know. We've been talking offline a lot, but watching a lot of golf this year. I mean, we're in this pool where a lot of people in it, and I'm winning. And I picked Brooks, and I was so happy last week. So it'll
make it so much easier to pay for my golf with money like that.
Yeah. Yeah. If it holds. The golf season's a little more. A little deeper in than baseball season, so we're almost there.
Yeah,
so
you're pretty much past. I'd say past the halfway point when it comes to the big boy stuff. So you're doing pretty good there. Yeah, when we come back next week, we'll be in June. It'll be June 1st, which is crazy. We're 2 months into the baseball season, still a long ways to go.
We'll be recapping your Gladiator draft.
I'm sure. No, not gonna say no. Maybe I'll stream it live. We'll see what happens. But yeah, it'd be tons of fun stuff as we keep moving along here in June. If you guys have future questions for your season-long fantasy baseball, let us know. We'll take care of you guys on the show. But until next time, you can find Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I am at BD Intric. This is Bubba and the Bloom, episode 58. Catch you all next time.
Way to win up to 25 times your money this football season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of statistics, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and an enormous selection of players and stat options are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million football fans who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/get100. And use code GET100. That's code GET100 at prizepicks.com/get100 for a first deposit match up to $100. PrizePicks, daily fantasy sports made easy.